Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Lifestyle CEO Show. I'm your host, Donna Maria, the original Lifestyle CEO. And as you know, you have arrived at the one place on the Internet where we empower you to break all the rules, build your own corporate ladder, and create the life you love. Today's show is sponsored by the Handmade Beauty Network. Take a break from all of the high levels of synthetic ingredients in cosmetics today and try some beauty products that are made on a small scale with a whole lot of natural ingredients that your skin loves. Visit handmadebeauty.com and click on Find Beauty Products on the left side of the homepage and start treating your skin the way it deserves to be treated today. As you know, the Handmade Beauty Network is composed of a lot of small businesses. Most of them are quite small businesses. We've got some large business owners as well, but most of them are small business owners, and they know that in order to grow, they are going to have to make some steps to learn about how they can grow their businesses. And today, we have got a wonderful guest who is going to talk about one of the ways, one of the most effective ways to grow a business. I'm so excited to introduce you today to employment attorney Chris Farella of the law offices of Robert Stahl. Chris is an employment attorney with several years of experience, and one of his areas of specialty is in working with small businesses. So he talks the talk and walks the walk, and he has a really good understanding of the issues that are facing entrepreneurs today in many areas, but most specifically in the area of employment. And we all need help with our businesses, and Chris is going to help us discover some of the ways that we can get the help we need. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thank you, Donna Marie. It's a pleasure being here.
Well, I'm just absolutely delighted to have you, and I want to start the conversation this afternoon, Chris, by asking you to share with listeners what exactly is employment law and why do we care? Why is it important to us to understand something about it?
Well, employment law is a very general term that covers a number of areas that deal with, you know, the employment situation. You have to care about employment law because the minute you bring on your first employee, you are officially an employer subject to the laws of both the federal government as well as state laws. And this impacts things from the hiring process, you know, going from the ad that you place to fill the position to how the employee is to be treated on the job, you know, benefits that may or may not be subscribed to that employee, firing the employee who's not lived up to your expectations. Those are the types of the spectrum of things that face employers. And then not taking care of this area can lead to uninformed employment decisions, which then leads to potential litigation, which can undo years of hard work. And I know a lot of the people that are listening today have worked very hard to get their businesses in the position that they are in now. And you certainly don't want some decision that you made, you know, a year ago to undo all the, you know, hard work that you've done over the years.
Yeah.
And one of the things, just even if you followed everything I say today, it can't prevent someone from suing you, but it certainly can dramatically reduce your exposure to any type of liability.
Right, right. It sounds like there's a whole lot of things to consider. And just for my own benefit, I just kind of want to remind myself of, you know, one of the things that's so important about this show, and that is that people, you know, have a really good understanding of how they can grow. Because as small business owners, growth is sometimes a very desired thing, but it can also be a very scary thing. And the connection here is that in order to grow, you need help. And in order to get help, you have to know where to find it, how to find it, how to find good help, how to find reliable help, and how to do it in a way that it actually ultimately helps your business and doesn't weigh you down with some of the things that you just described. So, Chris, in light of those things, can you share, you mentioned employment kind of overall, and I asked that question. Can you share, too, are there ways besides actually hiring someone as an employee that you can get the help you need to help grow your business?
Certainly. There are a number of ways. You can hire directly somebody that becomes an employee. There's also a way of hiring people by contract. That is what what's normally termed as an independent contractor. That's someone who comes in, you pay them a lump sum, you don't pay any taxes towards them, no payroll taxes or any income tax withholdings, and they just do a very discrete task for you. one of the quickest examples of that is maybe a computer person has set up your website. They would be considered potentially an independent contractor. There's also, you can call staffing agencies as well, and they can provide you with employees if it's secretarial help that you need, or if you need to get a shipment out and you need a bunch of people to help you wrap boxes and get them out to the UPS store or the FedEx store. Mm-hmm. That's another avenue that you can go.
Like a temp agency?
Yeah, exactly, a temp agency, an employment personnel type place.
And in those cases, you don't pay any of the taxes or payroll. The temp agency takes care of all that. You just pay the temp agency.
Correct. You'll get an invoice from the agency itself, which will include all of those items.
Okay. Well, on the sort of continuum, and the people that I talk with most and the listeners that I know are listening to the show, just to kind of categorize things into easy-to-manage buckets, we have employee, the traditional employer-employee relationship, we have independent contractors, and then we have sort of a hybrid, which is kind of a hiring someone through a temp agency. Can we start, Chris, talking about the independent contractor option? Because I think most of our listeners will be more attracted to that option if they're just now starting to get their businesses to the point where they need some help. So can you share some of the things that a business owner needs to know about working in an independent contractor arrangement?
Sure. One of the key items is that the IRS looks at these agreements very carefully, and there's a 20-part test, and I won't go into the 20 parts that you go through, but I want to hit on a couple of them. One of the things that you definitely need with an independent contractor is a contract. That is, it specifies exactly why you're bringing this person on, the rate of pay, any benefits that you're giving that person. It sort of describes the relationship. And one of the keys to make sure that someone remains an independent contractor versus an employee where you would have to pay all these taxes is that they have independence. They have the right to make their own hours, complete tasks on their own timeline. Several times they look at whether you are providing the equipment. So if the person comes in with their own laptop or their own label maker or something of that nature, that is also helps you keep the person independent so that all you're doing is paying them their salary and not incurring withholding taxes and payroll taxes and unemployment insurance, which you would have with an employee.
Okay, so the independent contractor arrangement is a good way to kind of get real discreet independent tasks or very specifically defined tasks done for basically an hourly rate or some kind of flat rate.
That's correct.
Where the person is not attached to the business in any way other than that. You said there were 20 things, and I'm so glad you're not going to go through each of them, but the two that you mentioned are really important, right? That you really do set it up so that it's very distinct. And any third party can look at your arrangement and say, oh, that's not an employee, that's a contractor.
That's right.
Okay, so that's one way to do it and keep yourself from having to pay those kinds of things. Because states have things like workers' compensation pools and unemployment compensation pools that you have to pay into when you have an employee that you don't have to be concerned about if it's an independent contractor, right?
That's correct. And you know, we say that, and I don't want to scare anybody from that either, because what happens is you can hire a payroll company, and a lot of us have worked in companies where you get a paycheck from either Paychex or ADP is in a large uh-huh. company. Uh-huh. And again, they act like the employment agency that we spoke about earlier, where they will give you a bill, and you just have to make sure that money is in an account, and they'll take care of all the withholdings. However, if you want to avoid those expenses, one way of avoiding them is having the independent contractor, but you do have to be very careful to make sure that you do maintain the independence of that person through. And the best way to do it is through a contract, because it gives proof to anyone looking at it, meaning the IRS or a state income tax review. They can see that you did set this up that way and that this person is not an employee who's attached to your company.
So in layperson's terms, would it be fair to say that one of the things that both people get out of that is flexibility?
Absolutely.
And so that's probably like a hallmark of the benefit for the employer as well. Not employer, whoops, for the business owner, for the business owner as well as the person that's going to be performing some services there.
Right, and it also provides you, I mean, if you have space constraints because some of the businesses might be run out of the home and you don't want people coming through your home at all these times, it also provides the ability for someone to work at a different location as well.
Oh, so say you're a manufacturer of, let's say, soap, for example, which I know many of our listeners are. You manufacture soap or some other body care product. You can have that person come over and pick up the supplies they need to make, you know, 1,000 bars of soap over the next month. But they can do it on their own time, and that's sort of indicative. It's like a one of the things, one of the 20 things somebody might look at to say, oh, well, there's a really flexible relationship there. That's probably not an employee, or it looks more like it's probably an independent contractor.
That's correct, absolutely.
So it sounds like I'm just thinking about how exciting that is to contemplate, because most of the lifestyle CEOs that I work with are women, and they want to help other women. Maybe they have children. The people they want to work with have children. So having that kind of flexibility is beneficial. And do you think, Chris, that for many businesses, the independent contractor arrangement is sort of like a nice segue into becoming an employer? In other words, you can get you get the benefits of having someone help you in a small way, maybe doing discrete tasks with your business, but you don't incur some of the expenses that would be involved in that if you got an employee.
Well, it is certainly a great way to learn about someone and how they work and their work ethic and see if the two of you mesh, and that way it can help prevent problems later on if you're just straight hiring somebody out of an ad or taking somebody from a business that like a personnel business.
Mm-hmm.
So it does give you that great background of being able to work with somebody in a very sterile environment, no pun intended, with some of the businesses that you have
right.
to make it sterile. But in that sense, you keep them at arm's length, but you do get to learn about them and about how they work, and
right.
it certainly could lead you to bringing them on as an employee, or if they're so good and come up with great ideas, as a potential partner.
Right. That's such a great way to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to talk about getting that independent contractor and how to work with them and create a situation where you can protect some of the assets of your business even though you've got someone helping you. We're going to come right back in just a minute or so. 800-773-0355, or you can call your questions in and talk to Chris one-on-one. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Lifestyle CEO Show. We are here this afternoon talking with employment attorney Chris Farella from the law offices of Robert Saul. And I want to remind you guys that if you want to follow up to some of the important issues that Chris is sharing with us today, you can visit his website at stahlesq.com. And that's spelled stahlesq.com. There's a telephone number there, email, everything you need to get in touch with Chris and get some more information about how he might be able to help your business sort through some of these issues in a more specific sense. Before we took our break, Chris, we were talking about independent contractors and how engaging the services of an independent contractor can help a business grow. And I heard all those people out there in lifestyle CEO land saying, yeah, I can hire somebody to help them, to help me make my products and things like that. But won't those people also have access to confidential commercial secrets or commercial information about my business? And if so, how do I keep that information from being used against me later, perhaps if that person starts a business or shares some of my secrets with other people?
Right, and that should be of a unique concern, I believe, to people who are listening today, because a lot of this has to do with either secret ingredients or a secret way of making a product. Mm-hmm. And there are two considerations that you have regarding the protection of your business, which start off in the hiring process. You want to protect your confidential information, and you want to also protect yourself from competition from someone who you've taught the business, your business specifically. It sounds like when you start off that it's in an adversarial manner, that you're not trusting the person, but you have to remember that this is a business and that your mindset has to be, even though your instinct is telling you to be nice and to be gentle towards someone, you have to think of it, this is business, this is my life, this is what I've been working for, this is what I've put my last dollars into, so you want to make sure it's protected to the utmost.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, Chris, and I know this is a little bit of a sidebar, but I'm really, really glad you mentioned that because it points out something that is of importance to all aspects of a business, and we're talking about employing and getting help specifically, but what you just addressed is sort of an overall issue of having the mindset that any step you take with respect to your business, whether it's employing someone or engaging an independent person or setting up a website or talking with customers on the phone, whatever it is, to have that mindset of professionalism and that mindset of what we in the legal world call arm's length relationships. That is setting aside the personal personalities and the personal, maybe even personal similarities and personal like for another person, and really making that relationship professional in all respects.
Yes, and it's very important because it transcends all of the decisions that you have to make from the you know, interviewing a manufacturer or a supplier, and if they're not giving you the information that you need, mm-hmm. you have to begin to demand that. You can do it in a very polite way right. and a very direct way, but if you handle everything like a business, you will succeed a lot greater pace than people who are afraid because they might hurt someone's feelings.
That's such a great tip. Thank you for mentioning that. And then, so let's go back to the question of protecting confidential info and protecting yourself, or I guess you can't protect yourself from competition, but at least setting up arrangements with people that do not, like, basically start your own competition.
Right, and the first thing, you have to break it into two categories. One is confidential information,
okay.
and one is competition. Okay. And where you would normally have these, the areas that I'm about to go into, is in an employment contract. You would put clauses in that contract that would address these situations. So turning to confidential information first, like I said when we opened this segment, that these businesses that are listening today, probably this is one of the key factors, is protecting that secret formula, the valuable process, or the customer list. And also something that's overlooked a lot is goodwill. When you hear a company name like Burt's Bees, you think nice about them, and that has a value, and
right.
you want to make sure you protect that. So
okay.
to adequately protect them, you need to put in an agreement or a contract.
Mm-hmm.
You have to list out what it is that you believe is your confidential information. You don't have to go into detail. You don't have to say, well, here's the formula. What you need to just say is I am going to be presenting you with and giving you information about my company, the way I do business, the customers that I service, the types of formulas that I use, the type of process that I use, and you are to keep that confidential.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a contractual provision that goes in. and it is enforced through the court system. If someone breaks it, you have to sue them, and a lot of times you sue them in a. You've heard it, I think, if anybody's been paying attention to the BlackBerry situation, they talk about an injunction. And what the injunction is a legal way of stopping somebody from doing something. So if your employee took off with your customer list, you would go to court to seek an injunction to get them to stop and turn it back over to you. So that's one way of doing it.
And is there anything short of actually suing someone? In most states, you can probably, depending on how much is at issue, might be able to go to small claims court. So you wouldn't have to be like in the big, huge court that usually takes a longer period of time than small claims.
Well, I know I can speak generally about that in for all the different states, but usually there is a value that's put on each of the smaller courts. So, for example, in New Jersey, small claims courts only hear cases from $1 to $3,000,
okay.
and then you go up from there. So you'd have to see what it's worth. Hopefully, this information that you have is worth a lot of money, but
hopefully.
Yeah, and certainly it's hard to sometimes put value on goodwill, but you still need to see an attorney and get their opinion on what court you should sue in and how quickly you want to get this resolved. One of the tough things about the law is that the wheels of justice grind very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to be able to get into court very quickly through this injunction that I just mentioned. It's a way to get in beyond the normal lawsuit, which will start a process, but it'll be a very slow process. And in the meantime, your person's competing against you and is taking your customers, mm-hmm. so you want to be able to get that done quickly.
Chris, this also brings up an interesting point, too, about what to do when you discover that, let's say you do have an agreement in place, such as the one you described, and then you discover that someone has, in fact, done what the agreement says that they can't do, you know, taking your confidential information and things. And then, I mean, as a small business owner, for most people who have never, you know, been an employer or the business owner with people working with them before, that's a really scary time, because then you have to figure out, oh my goodness, what am I going to do?
Right, and
I mean, sort of before you go to court, you have to do something, right?
You do, and you hopefully you can try and do it in a civil sort of way, which is send a letter and ask them to cease and desist the actions that they're taking. And hopefully you have a foundation for them for the belief that they took your material.
Right.
For example, what usually happens is you will get a call from a customer saying, "Hey, did you give, you know, Joe my name, because he just called me and he's got ABC company and he's selling the same thing you did." And that's usually the tip-off. Another tip-off might be that your sales have a certain monthly range, and somehow you're missing that range, and you can't explain why you're missing that range. And that's another tip-off. You say, well, maybe somebody's out there doing something, and you have to almost be your own personal investigator and look around and say, you know, why is something going wrong? But typically, it's a complaint from an existing customer that somebody has contacted them.
Okay, so taking it a step even back further from that, when you engage this person, we're talking about independent contractors now, but to some extent, you know, the employment relationship deals with this issue too, because you don't want an employee to steal your stuff either. But when you're hiring someone or you're interviewing them to be an employee or a contractor, stepping back, you know, one step further back from actually having them working with you, are there some things that you can do to kind of check, maybe do a background check or get referrals? What sorts of things can you do up front to try to minimize the chances? I know you can't eliminate it, but minimize the chances that this person is the type of person who would do this to you.
Well, again, you try your best, and that's the only thing you can do. And one of the things that I will always trumpet is the idea of documentation, documentation, documentation. You want to look at everything that is out there. One of the things that is very interesting is if you ask people for, you get their resume and you ask them for references, you would be surprised how many people put references on there that the people that they listed do not know that they've been listed as a reference, mm-hmm. or do not have a favorable opinion of the person. It's mm-hmm. a very strange thing, but you will find that. So what you need to do is when someone does hand you references, you need to call them, and you need to call all of them, and you need to make sure that the prospective employee knows that you're not going to give them a job until you've gotten a satisfactory response from those references.
So again, we're back to that really good point you made, which is treating everything like a business. Gee, you know, we're going to take a little bit of a break. I can't believe how fast time is flying. I want to give some listeners an opportunity to call in, so I'm going to mention the toll-free listener call-in number again. It's 800-773-0355. You guys, this is a fantastic opportunity to talk to a real, live, walking, talking, breathing lawyer who breathes this information every day, who can help you get some basic tips and pointers to help you get some help for your business. So 800-773-0355 is the number. This is the Lifestyle CEO Show. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Lifestyle CEO Show. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and we are here. We are just covering so much important ground for small businesses today. You know, Chris, I read a statistic not too long ago. You know, of course, entrepreneurship, I think, is on the rise in this country and maybe even around the world, but that America's 25 million small businesses employ more than 50% of the private workforce. That is a huge number. And it's wonderful because it demonstrates the significance to our economy of small businesses and also points out the importance of this topic to people who are owning small businesses as well as to the people that work for them. They're making significant contributions, and so understanding from someone like you how to do it right, to insulate yourself, and for the employed person or the independent contractor to get the most they can out of a business relationship, too, it's just so important. Don't you think it's just vital?
It is, and one of the biggest problems that occurs in employment litigation between employers and employees is a misinterpretation, either a misinterpretation of expectations or goals, and that is something that needs to also be addressed so that you don't go down that bad path of litigation and having that all-consuming feeling that I'm trying to run a business and I'm being sued. A lot of it has to do with listening to the other side, hearing what's going on, and trying to address it as you go, as opposed to putting it on the back burner.
So is that one of the benefits of having something written down, that everybody gets to address their concerns and questions up front and sign a document so that a year or two down the road nobody's going, well, gee, we didn't agree to that?
It's becoming the absolute thing to have now, and that's a handbook, which can be mm-hmm. something very simple, but it's the main purpose of an employee handbook is to communicate your company's policies and procedures. Mm-hmm. What it normally does is it contains information about work procedures, expected behavior, and benefits, and what it does is it sets forth a concise guideline for your employees to follow and should answer key questions like, you know, if I'm sick, what do I do? Who do I call to say that I'm having a sick day? Or how many vacation days do I have? But most importantly, the courts now look at an employer and what the employer has communicated to the employee about procedures to complain about sexual harassment or to complain mm-hmm. about discrimination mm-hmm. or those types of subjects. So it's that is something also that needs to be mentioned, and we can do an entire hour just on employee handbooks themselves, but there are certain things, and especially today now with internet and email, you have to have policies with, you know, because you don't want an employee going up on the internet and downloading material that should not be in anybody's computers or sending threatening emails to a friend or something.
No, for a small business owner, putting together an employee handbook, well, let me ask this. If you don't have employees but you just have contractors or one or two contractors, do you need an employee handbook?
Not necessarily, because you're really not in charge of those people, so they shouldn't be looking to you for guidance in those respects. So you're not giving them vacation days. So that's why you wouldn't need it in that case.
So you would just make sure everything is spelled out in the agreement.
Everything has to be spelled out because that's where everybody's going to look back if there's a problem. Everybody's going to turn around and say, well, what's the agreement?
For a company that does have an employee, let's just say you just have one and you just hired one person and they're only going to be working for you 20 hours a week. How do you balance the need to, you're a one-person shop, you're doing everything yourself, and you just hired one person to help you a little bit. How do you balance that with, you know, taking the time to actually write a handbook? I mean, does it have to be a book? Can it be like 3 pages that everybody, you know, looks at in one, in a loose-leaf notebook in your office? Does it have to be fancy and intricate?
It doesn't have to be fancy or intricate. It could be simple as long as it covers the topics. And one of the main things you want, you can just have a book in your office, but what you want is a written acknowledgement that the employee has read it and understood it. Mm-hmm. Because what happens countless times in litigation is when this issue comes up, didn't you know about the employee handbook? The employee almost always says, I don't remember signing it, or I don't remember reading it. And that's something that you want. It's an acknowledgement, hey, I read it on this date, I understood the provisions,
mm-hmm.
and then you take that acknowledgement and you stick it in the little file with the person's name on it, and hopefully you never have to go back to it, but it's there if you need it.
Okay, great. Now, I do want to go back to independent contractors, but since we've broadened it a little bit, I want to ask one more question, and I'm anticipating the question of people that are listening. Where do you go? I mean, I remember as an employee, our company handbook was like a huge notebook. It was about the size of a paperback in terms of dimensions, but it was very thick. And I do remember having to sign things and, you know, to acknowledge that I had read it and everything. But, and I also got a copy of it, which was really nice because I used it every now and then to see, you know, how many sick days do I get? I forgot. But when you have something like that, can you, as a starting point, let's just say, again, you're a very small business, you're on a budget, you don't have a lot of time to invest in this. Can you use as a model an employee handbook that another company has used for example? I mean, I still have my old employee handbook from 15 years ago because they gave me a copy. Can you use that sort of as a model to look at some of the verbiage and some of the things that you might want to say in your employee handbook?
You certainly can use that as a model. The only thing that affects it is things change as time progresses. And, for example, right now what's very critical in most employee handbooks that was not critical a few years ago is military leave policy. Also, with the explosion of the internet and emails and outside and all the different providers that you can get email through, internet policies and electronic mail policies are big, so you do have to be careful when you use somebody's form that you're up to date and you're current about what is the new area of the law and what is going to now affect employers from this date forward.
Yeah, that is so important. And we've got a caller person that emailed me with a question. And Kevin, just so you know, we've got a lot of Lifestyle CEOs who were moms, and we've got sometimes screaming babies in the background, so I always let people know in advance they can email me questions if things are a little hectic around their house. And this question is from Keisha, and Keisha is interested in adding independent consultants to her business. She doesn't say what kind of business it is, but she's interested in adding independent consultants, I guess probably in kind of a network marketing capacity, because people are asking her, how do I sign up to be an independent consultant so I can sell your products to people in my neighborhood. Do you have any advice for how someone can start up a program like that from scratch?
Well, that's a very interesting question that Keisha presents. It's very similar to the independent contractor. What you would do is set up very similar to contract sales groups, where you would set up a whole sales fleet through a contract, and you would have to sit down with an attorney and go through what is your expectation, what is it that you're going to give these people, is it a flat salary, is it commission-based? There are a number of issues that have to come up, but it's very similar to the independent contractor agreement, and it would be, you know, something that an attorney would most likely have to draft for you because it does have some intricate details to it.
So you might have the idea being to create some kind of agreement once and then have it apply to everybody. Let's just say you had 20 sales independent consultants in 20 different cities. You could have the basic form apply for everyone, but is one of the things you're saying that in a particular city or state you may have something specific that needs to be taken into account for that particular consultant?
That may be because, for example, if you were selling in Manhattan, you wouldn't want the same salesperson covering the same exact ground, so you may want to set forth an area or a territory. But that, again, that could be worked into a form, so you wouldn't have to reinvent the wheel with each consulting agreement. You may want to always put in a territory because
right.
That way the salespeople aren't stepping on each other and potential business owners are not getting a visit from the same sales force several times with the same product.
Yeah, and you know, Chris, this issue that Keisha raises is, I see this more and more, and I would imagine you do too, as small business owners try to figure out one way to do a couple things. Number one, they want to get their products out there without having to deal with the traditional sales rep or, you know, the buyer for the nationwide marketing company or something. And they also want to be able to work with other people who have the same kind of lifestyle concept as they do. And for many of them, that means another mom who's trying to generate revenue with, you know, in the most flexible way possible. She doesn't want to own anything because that's, you know, more work than she wants to be involved in, but she still wants to be able to generate the revenue. Are you seeing more and more, for lack of a better term, it's like the Avon Tupperware kind of concept. Are you seeing this more and more among small business owners that you deal with?
I do, and actually, is interestingly enough, it works with small law firms as well. Our firm doesn't do estate planning, so we have to create a situation where if someone comes to us with estate planning questions, we can refer them to someone else in our network. But this is also something that is coming up with small businesses, is they join sort of strategic alliances, which is, I think, the term that I've been hearing a number of times, mm-hmm. with other people that have an interest and share the same values and try to create a more powerful organization with not getting involved in partnerships and huge companies, but
right.
in just creating these alliances with each other.
Kind of like a cross-promotional concept. That's a really great question, Keisha. Thank you for that. We're going to take our final break here. The call-in number to ask your question is 800-773-0355, or you can also email me at dm@lifestyleceo, like Keisha did. We're going to take a break, and Kevin has three tips, three specific things to think about, three important things to ponder if you're thinking about hiring someone. This is the Lifestyle CEO Show. We'll be right back.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.
This is the Lifestyle CEO Show. I'm Donna Maria, and we have just a few more minutes left with Chris, and I got to tell you, I'm just going to jump right back into it so we don't lose any time, but I do want to let you know the call-in number is 800-773-0355. Chris has the three most important things you need to know before you hire someone. Chris, what are those things?
I think the number one thing that people have to understand, especially the listeners here today, is have realistic expectations for the person that you're hiring. Understand that and come to grips with the fact that no one is going to care as much about the business as you do, because this is your baby. This, you've nurtured this business from the germ of an idea to where it is now, and the employee is going to be coming to the table looking for a job. Now, it may turn out that if you do everything right and you hire the right person, they will learn to care about the business as much as you do, but don't put that expectation on them so that when you're working late at night one night, don't get angry that that person left at 6 o'clock because that person's day is over at 6 o'clock.
Darn it!
So that's number one. Number two is something...
You're not going to work as hard as us, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Number two is what we talked about a little bit before, was make the hiring process a business decision. Don't look at it as, oh, this person dresses really nice, so I should hire them. Listen to what they have to say. Dressing nice is part of the interview process and part of the decision making. But make sure that you sit back and realize that this is going to be a business. Do you want this person representing your business out in the community?
Mm-hmm.
And the third is, as I was saying before too, is the documentation. Legal problems between employers and employees often focus on, you know, on a he said, she said, she said, she said type of situation. So what you're going to want to do is you're going to have to become a record keeper. As much as that bothers some people, you have to have a folder where if you put an ad in the newspaper for this job, you want to start the folder off with that ad. You then want to put, you know, the resumes that you received from that ad into a folder. You want to put the interview notes that you take when you're interviewing someone. And one tip I'd like to give you is that use the same set of questions for every interview. It helps you gauge, first of all, what the answers were and how you can compare one interviewee's answers against another, but it also gives you a recollection of what you asked that person and what you said to that person during the interview.
Mm-hmm.
And you also want to, you know, pull together any type of references that they give you, and make sure that you do, in fact, call the references. And if you call all the references for one interviewee, make sure you call all the references for every other one. You
so
don't want to.
It's really about being consistent in your practices.
Absolutely, and that goes a long way, not only just with the interview process, but with discipline, with pay, with ideas about vacation time as well.
So try to the extent you can to do the same thing with everyone. Treat everyone equally. That gives other people less of an opportunity to say that you singled them out for some reason.
Absolutely, yes.
So realistic expectations, treating it like a business, and documentation and consistency.
That's right. And then if you like them, if on paper you like everything that you see, and you bring them in for an interview, make sure you meet them in person, because someone could be very good over the phone and you could say, wow, this sounds terrific. But that may be their strong point is phone calls. And when they come in person, they may not be somebody that you'd want coming to your home every day, whether it's working with you from your home or just coming to your home to pick things up. You have to be quite careful about the questions that you ask the people when they come in for the interview. You can't ask questions like, hey, when did you graduate high school? As strange as that sounds, it's something that's conversational, especially if you're bringing somebody in from the town that maybe you've lived in for a number of years. It's an age question. It's because people assume that, okay, they're 18 when they graduate high school, and you can do the math, and you now have a potential claim that you're being discriminatory about age.
Now, is one of the things you can do is you can ask people for a resume, and if you're interested in knowing how old they are for whatever reason, you can kind of look and see what date, timelines and stuff there is in their resume, and you can draw some conclusions from there.
Right, and you can ask about college and any type of graduate school, because that's not prohibited under any type of age discrimination, since people go to college at different times in their lives, so it's not presumed.
I see. I got it. So the high school question makes it a little bit different.
Correct. Now, one of the key things, too, is to listen to what the interviewee says during your interview.
Uh-huh.
For example, if they say something like, you know, I've always been fascinated by fire, that may not be something that you want to have come into your home. There's also, I hope your company doesn't have a policy against concealed weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So You do certainly want to listen to the types of things they say. Also, be aware of any gaps, unexplained gaps in their resumes, because that might also indicate to you some issue. And also listen to the questions. Sometimes you can judge somebody by the quality of the question if they did the research into your company. I always like it when I interview a potential person to join our firm that they know something about the firm and that they've come in and said, oh, I saw your name listed here and, you know, I read a case where you were the attorney on the case and you did this. It shows that extra mile that they woke up that morning, they got prepared, and came in to meet with you.
So that's a good point too, that they've done a little bit of invested a little bit of time finding out a little bit more about you.
Correct.
In advance. So it certainly helps make you feel good about what you're doing, if nothing else. Well, Chris, tell me a little bit about this. We only have a few minutes left, I think, but when you hire someone or even have someone as a contractor that comes into your home or your small office, do you have to be concerned about what happens if they trip on the ice?
Yes, you do. This is an area that I don't know an awful lot about the way insurance interplays with each other, but you're talking about a homeowner's policy, you're talking about your own business liability policy, and you're also talking potentially about workers' compensation law as well. So what you'd want to do is you'd want to go in and talk to your insurance agent or a company that does your insurance and ask them about the interplay between those three areas because you do have a home business.
Okay, good tip. And can you find out more about workers' compensation funds and unemployment compensation funds directly from the state where your business is located?
That's usually a good way of doing it. And right now, most states have pretty user-friendly websites that can give you sort of a question and answer about workers' compensation. I know in New Jersey it does have that.
Go to a really good search engine and put something in like hiring employees in New Jersey.
Yes, and most states have a Department of Labor where that'll usually be a good place to go, and they'll have links to that might further direct you to a more specific question.
Right. Okay. Good. I just thought that was really important point to point out. Believe it or not, we are almost out of time. Chris, I just want to thank you so much for your time and sharing of your knowledge. I want to remind everyone that you can call Chris or email him or visit his website to get more information about the resources he can offer and how he can help your business take into account some of these issues while you grow. Because, you know, there's only so much we can do by ourselves, guys. We're one person, may have a family, a husband, or whatever the case is, and, you know, eventually you just run out of hours. If you want to grow your business, you have to find a way to get some help, and Chris Varela can help you do that, particularly if you're in New York and New Jersey. Chris is in New Jersey at the law offices of Robert Stahl at Stahl, that's S-T-A-H-L-E-S-Q, stahlesq.com. His telephone number is area code 908-301-9001 for those of you who want to give him a call. I want to just let you guys know, too, we've got some great shows coming up here on the Lifestyle CEO Show. On March the 13th, we've got Warren Brown, host of the Food Network's popular news show, Sugar Rush, and the owner of Cake Love. Now, Chris, this is a guy that you probably could really relate to, just like me. He's also a former attorney who discovered a passion for making cakes. So he left his job, and he makes cakes now, and he just got a show on the Food Network traveling around the country telling everybody where the local sugar rush is.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And also, I think he's just got a contract for, I think, a new cookbook. So Warren is a really great guy, and he's going to share his tips and some of his experiences about how he grew his business. On March the 20th, we've got Lisa Druxman from the nationwide franchise Stroller Strides. And this lady, you know, started having fitness classes in her neighborhood, and the next thing you know, she's got a small business, and she's doing really well. Very exciting stuff. The week after that, April 3rd, we've got a franchise attorney who's like one of the best franchise attorneys in the entire universe is going to be here, Andrew Sherman, who's written dozens of books on the topic and helps this country's largest franchises make their business successful. He's going to talk. That's a good show for Keisha, don't you think, Chris?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, you guys. I want you guys to tune in next week for Warren Brown and all the other great guests we have. Thank you to Chris, our guest today. We're going to see you next week with the host of Sugar Rush, Warren Brown. In the meantime, break all the rules, build your own corporate ladder, and create the life you love. See you next week, guys.
Thank you, Donna Maria.
Thank you.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.